even if the wife is home during the day, it is inappropriate for a male pastor to visit her alone. And finally, some people just don't want any sort of visitation at all. They'll come to church, but they will come to church on their terms and when they want to. But a pastoral visit is seen as an intrusion into their private time, and they hold their private time in extreme high value. But despite these obstacles to visitation, I think there can be some very, very positive outcomes of the pastor's effort to visit. First, visitation backs up the preaching ministry. To include some visitation as part of your weekly routine provides a point of reference for parishioners upon which they can hang your words from the pulpit. In other words, it gives them a foundation from which to stand to flesh out your words. Sometimes the pastor is just seen as someone who's speaking. The pastor's not real because the person who's doing the speaking has not in any way related to me. But for the parishioner, if the parishioner knows you, has heard you speak, has had coffee with you in their home, they feel more attuned to you and therefore listen more attentively, and they can take what you're saying, compare it to who you are and their visit, and it just adds kind of a foundation to your words. It backs up the preaching. You're no longer an anonymous man preaching the word. You're someone who has flesh and blood. As you visit your congregation, you'll begin to pick up things about the work environment, things that they are struggling with on a daily basis. Maybe there's an attitude there amongst the congregation. Maybe there's a lack of faith or a very specific need. But you probably wouldn't know that as acutely if visitation had not been done. And so visitation helps you to take your messages and apply relevancy to them and hit the nail on the head, in a sense, with the sermon hammer. I'm not saying you hammer on them. I'm simply saying that you're direct. It's very to the point, and it meets the need perfectly and specifically. Visitation helps with that. Third, visitation is perceived as caring. Pastors who spend a good deal of their time in the study are often perceived as not caring, and they're often seen as being distant. And I think this is usually unfair. It's usually far from the truth, because for them, it is precisely because they care so deeply for their congregation that they spend so much time studying the Word of God. But as is often the case, perception becomes reality for many people. Involvement in the lives of your congregation shows a personal side. It is interpreted to mean that you care. And if people perceive that you care for them, they will be more forgiving when you make blunders. Fourth, powerful ministry can take place in the home of a parishioner. After all, you're on their turf. It's a very safe environment for them. And significant impact can occur in the living room of someone's home. There have been many times when I have held someone's hand during a time of need in their living room. I have put my arm around them. I have prayed for them. I've read scriptures to them. It's been very, very meaningful times that they've shared openly and kind of on a different plane with me when they're in their home than when they're in the formal setting of the church or in the formal setting of my office. And I have to say that a lot of prayer, a lot of significant ministry has occurred in the homes of parishioners. Many pastors meet with their leaders 10 minutes before the service to pray for the Lord's blessing and the Lord's anointing. Matter of fact, many churches do this. This is not unusual. It is not rare. It is the rule rather than the exception. But I have to say that rarely would you find me at those prayer meetings before the service. Because I just felt like if we weren't prayerfully ready for the service by 10 minutes prior to its beginning, then I think we're in a whole heap of trouble, friends. Now, I understand that for most, it's a time to pause before the Lord, just kind of prior to the big event, to kind of say to Him one more time, Lord, this is yours. We do want you to work here. We want your Spirit to just work amongst us. I understand that. Now, I'm not against that whatsoever. But for me, while the leaders met for prayer, I was out among the people. Because Sunday mornings was a high visibility time for the pastor, and I understood that. I was aware of that. So rather than seclude myself with a few individuals in the back room, because I met for prayer with these people throughout the week, and especially on Wednesdays. So it's not as though I were giving up on prayer. But instead, I didn't want to seclude myself with them and to be away from the majority of the people. So I would walk up and down the aisles, and I would shake hands. I would smile. I was greeting the relatives and friends of family. I was listening to prayer requests, and several times I would put my arm around someone, and we would pray for a very specific need right there in the sanctuary, right there in the pew, right before the service while the music was playing. And I enjoyed it. It was a good time for the congregation to see me in action among the people. It was, in essence, perceived pastoral care. Because they saw me put my arm around someone before the service, they deduced that I cared about them. Now, please don't take this to be hypocritical or a manipulative action, because it really wasn't. I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed it. It gave me energy. I like to be there with my congregation. I love to shake their hands and to greet them before the service. It was one way for me, a busy pastor, to visibly show my congregation that I cared for them, and I wanted them to know that I cared for them. This was just one of many ways that I could show them how much I love them. Now, if this isn't you, then that's okay. That's fine. But for me, it was maximizing my time with the congregation. Ministry occurred, and really it was a wonderful way for a busy pastor like myself to show love toward his congregation in a tangible way on a Sunday morning prior to the service. Well, what should be the frequency of pastoral visits? Muddying the waters with this issue is the differing expectations of parishioners. It is not uncommon for members to look back to, quote, the good old days, when the congregation was small and they could expect frequent pastoral visits. The pastor really isn't a pastor in their eyes if the pastor hasn't visited them once a month. For some people, it's once a week, and for other people, it's once a year. There are those who are extremely lonely. They are very lonely, acutely sense the loneliness because of a spouse who has passed on. And so they often expect the pastor to visit on a very frequent and regular basis so they can alleviate that loneliness which they feel. And so they desire the pastor to be a friend, kind of on call, whenever they get lonely. And on the other hand, there are those who see a pastoral visit as an invasion of privacy, or maybe it is some signal, some subtle signal, to get more involved in the church. What's the pastor want this time? What is he really trying to say to me? And some people just want to be left alone to avoid the inconvenience. I mean, when the pastor comes over for a visit, I mean, for these people, they have to clean the house. They have to dust. they have to get the Bible out and set it on the counter, a table there. And they have to get everything ready because they wouldn't want the pastor to see how they really lived. And so it's really an inconvenience. And after all, who knows? I mean, maybe their favorite television show may be on the night that the pastor visits. And if that's true, then they will remember the evening that you interrupted that which was so important to them. Some people enjoy a friendly visit, but they begin to feel guilty if the pastor visits too much, because they don't want the pastor to neglect personal responsibilities at home for their sake. They don't want to be seen as a home wrecker in a sense, or taking the pastor's time away from other people that maybe he could visit that may need it much more than they. So for some people, they enjoy it, but they feel guilty. And so you have all these differing expectations about how frequently a pastor should visit his congregation. The frequency, I believe, depends on your congregation and on your ability to read your congregation. It's up to the pastor to gather the pertinent data to discern who may need frequent visits and who may need occasional visits and who desires no visits. If your congregation is large, it's going to be extremely difficult for you to visit everyone. If your congregation is small, the expectation of visitation is enhanced, and you simply, hopefully, will have more time to devote to this particular activity, this task that's involved in ministry. So by reading your congregation well, you can avoid the potential pitfalls that come from misreading. And while pastors are not babysitters, I think it is wise and really worth the effort to visit those who need it more frequently, because this could preclude future problems. So by reading your congregation well, you can get a feel for the frequency of your visits to certain individuals. For some, it's going to be more. And for others, it's going to be less. So visit according to your perception or your reading of the congregational data. Beginning a new pastorate provides an excellent time for visitation. Being new to the community, you're not bogged down with community commitments or activities, or with launching new church projects. Your goal is to build trust and establish yourself with the people. And it's wise to do as much visitation as possible to get off to a good start and allow the congregation and you some time to get to know one another. I usually took one night a week for visitation purposes. This allowed me a systematic approach to visitation. The order of visitation was determined by need. Sometimes it would be a visitor. Other times it would be someone with a special need that I happen to be aware of, and other times it was more of a random choice. Well, who haven't I visited lately? But with one night a week solely devoted to visitation, I was able to systematically include visitation into my work week. Now, there are some appropriate do's and don'ts that should be pointed out. And while they may seem rather obvious, you would be surprised at how many pastors get into hot water over these issues. First, don't call on someone without an appointment. Now, I'm well aware that some evangelism strategies do not call for an appointment, and small rural farm communities may expect their pastor not to set an appointment prior to their coming over. They want the pastor to feel like family and just drop by. But I believe the general rule is that it is proper to call and set an appointment. When I was visiting several families, I would often call and say, I'm going to be out visiting Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening, and whichever was the case, and I wondered if I could stop by for a brief visit. And usually their response was positive. If it was negative, then I wouldn't go, but at least they knew that I had tried. And I would usually call a day before so they had plenty of time to prepare for my coming if they needed it. And if they asked for a time, I gave them an approximate time when they could expect me. And if they didn't, then that simply allowed me the flexibility without time constraints. Don't visit at mealtime. This makes the family feel uncomfortable and doesn't allow for a quiet, candid visit free from distractions. The last thing you want when you're visiting a family is someone to say, please pass the potatoes. It just kind of is a distraction to the real task. Do inform the church leadership of your approach to visitation and your schedule. I made it a point in my monthly report to the board to list the number and types of visits made. This gave them the assurance that I was involved in the lives of the people. To protect yourself, because there will always be someone screaming that you do not visit enough, keep a record or a log of who you visit. This provides a written record of your activities should they ever be questioned. This has been very helpful to me on several occasions. Now, you don't take this log and throw it in someone's face and say, see, there you go. Obviously, you use tact. But if someone does happen to question your visitation, you have a record of it. If the pastor arrives and finds the person of the opposite sex at home alone, staying is out of the question. Stay only momentarily to exchange greetings and then promise to call again. The spouse who isn't home will certainly appreciate your sensitivity, and you protect yourself and your reputation. Your reputation is important. And it takes years to build a reputation, but it can be broken and disabled in a moment. Because in ministry, if it could have happened, it did happen. So avoid placing yourself in situations like this that could tempt you and hinder your ministry. It can be appropriate to visit members of the opposite sex who are alone if they are elderly. Is it okay to take a person of the opposite sex with you as you visit someone of the opposite sex who is home alone? In other words, would it be appropriate for me to take a woman along to visit a woman who is home alone? Well, on most occasions, my answer is no. I wanted to avoid driving around with another woman in my car. And I have made exceptions when there was an emergency or when I took someone who obviously took away any suspicions. A younger pastor may get away with taking a retired person or an elderly person with him on visitation, but I believe as a general rule, you will want to avoid any situation that may hinder your reputation and your ability to minister effectively. Because an ounce of precaution is worth a pound of cure. The frequency and nature of the pastor's visitation methods and schedule can often become a sore spot if understanding and agreement is not reached. That's why I believe it is important during the candidating process or early during the arrival of appointed pastors to discuss the needs and expectations of the congregation and the leadership regarding visitation and the views and methods and practices of the minister. I think this should be discussed up front, and I think it should be done very openly so that frustration doesn't develop because one party isn't meeting the expectations of the other. So this too, by being open and honest at the very beginning, can help to preclude future problems. Whether you're a pastor who likes to visit or you're a pastor who would rather be studying, establishing lay ministry participation in visitation is extremely important to the life and welfare of the church. As a pastor, you see, you can't possibly meet everyone's need, nor should you be expected to do so. When lay people are trained and released for the visitation ministry, in essence, you expand the system of care in your church, and you are able to meet far more needs than you alone could possibly meet. Do you realize that there are other individuals within your church who have pastoral gifts? Well, you might be the full-time hired pastor, but that doesn't mean you have a corner on the pastoral gifts within your congregation. Find individuals who love to be with people. Find people who are caring, who are perceptive at reading needs, who have a deep empathy for others, who exhibit pastoral gifts, and then train them, and then release them from ministry in the area of their giftedness. And it's quite all right to be very specific as well. For instance, If a person has pastoral gifts with a specific interest in ministering to those falling between the cracks, then train that person and let them move into that area of interest. If someone with pastoral gifts has a burden for the elderly, then train that person, help them to focus and utilize their gifts more effectively, and release them to begin a visitation ministry to the elderly. Because when you link up one's giftedness with one's passion or burden, you do not have to motivate that person. They are self-motivated because they're involved in an area they are not only gifted for, but also in an area where they sense God's calling. So in essence, everybody wins. The people who need the ministry get ministered unto. The people who need a ministry find one that fits them to a T. And pastors expand their visitation ministry far beyond what they could do alone. So training and freeing the laity for visitation ministry is a powerful way to show care and concern for individual members of the body of Christ. If you're pastoring a large congregation, it's going to be nearly impossible for you to visit each member of the congregation. However, I think it is wise to make it a high priority to visit with all of the leadership. These are the people you're going to be working with most intimately. Gain their support and trust by showing them how much you care for them and their families. And they'll say, if he cares so much for me and my family, how much more does he care about the entire church family? Pastors of large churches have to make the most of the social gatherings they go to and make an effort to see as many people as possible during these events. It is extremely meaningful for the pastor to visit those in the hospital at least once, if it's possible. Because people understand that the pastor of a large church is a busy person, but they will forever remember the time that was taken out of a busy day and a busy schedule to see them in the hospital. They will forever remember that. And then the more detailed follow-up hospital visits can be handled by another staff member or an elder. Home visitation can be very rewarding for the pastor. Pastors meet people of all kinds, from children to the elderly, from the economically poor to the economically rich, various stages of spiritual maturity, various ages, various backgrounds, denominational traditions, various interests and personalities, all make visitation interesting, to say the least. Despite the fact that I tend to be more of the studying type, I have to say that some of the most memorable times of my ministry experience has been in the homes of my parishioners. I've prayed with them, and I've prayed for them. I've cried with them, and I've laughed with them. So even though visitation may not be your strong point, it can be a powerful opportunity for ministry to take place on a turf that is non-threatening and safe for the parishioner. This is the end of one.